Chapter 6 Jolly Good Fellows. Someday, I'll write a detailed account of all the marvellous things we saw and did when we were up on the plateau. We called it Maple White Land in honour of the dead American. There was the time a young ichthyosaurus, half seal, half fish, got caught up in our fishing nets. The night when a green water snake carried off in its coils the man steering our canoe. The carnivorous dinosaurs that killed a group of Indians by falling upon them and squashing them flat. The huge running bird, bigger than an ostrich, with a ferocious beak, which chased Challenger one evening. There are many more tales, but I need to bring this one to a close. After the battle with the ape men, we moved our gear and set up a new camp beneath the Indians' caves close to the lake. We'd hoped the Indians would help us leave the plateau, but whenever we suggested something, like building a bridge across to the column of rock, for example, they just smiled, shrugged their shoulders and shook their heads. They were friendly and generous, but we sometimes felt as if we were their prisoners. It was as if, rather than not being able to help us get away, they just didn't want to, because they wanted to keep us there. Our thoughts were constantly turning to how we might escape. But we also kept ourselves busy with pet projects. Summerlee was busy collecting insects for his collection. Lord John spent a lot of time rooting about in the blue mud that could be found near the volcanic craters. Challenger built a workshop around a geyser that blew out natural gas. One night, he invited us to see what he'd been doing there.
"I have exerted my whole brain force upon the problem of how we shall descend these cliffs," he said pompously, stroking his beard. "And my solution? A gas balloon. I have made a balloon from the dried stomach of one of those gigantic fishes in the lake, and behold the result."
He held the empty balloon over the geyser and pointed proudly as it filled with gas and began to rise, tugging at the rope that kept it tethered to the ground.
"Midsummer madness," snorted Summerlee.
"Clever old dear, ain't he?"
Lord John whispered to me delightedly.
"I will now," said Challenger with a smile of anticipation, "demonstrate the carrying power of the balloon."
As he said this, he cut the rope from the moorings and was pulled off his feet with terrifying speed as the balloon shot up in the air. I grabbed his waist and Lord John grabbed my legs, and we would all have been carried off to who knows where if the rope hadn't snapped and the balloon disappeared from view.
"Splendid!"
cried Challenger, rubbing his elbow where he'd landed with a bump on the ground.
"Give me another week, gentlemen, and I'll have made a second balloon to replace that one."
Fortunately, we didn't have to use this method. One of the Indians who we'd saved from the ape men came to us one evening with a rough drawing. He put his fingers to his lips to show that we had to keep this secret, but we worked out that the drawing was showing us a route through the caves to the outside. That night, we gathered up our belongings and crept away. Within 2 hours, we were back at the foot of the Red Cliffs and hurrying to be reunited with Zambo. And now I've just a few loose ends to tie up before I finish. When we got back to Britain, I dashed round to see my beloved Gladys Huntingdon. Only she wasn't Gladys Huntingdon anymore. She was Gladys Potts. She'd married a junior clerk in a bank, a weedy chap with even less chance of becoming a hero than I had. A week later, there was a big meeting at the Zoological Society. Summerlee told the members all we had seen and done and said Challenger had been telling the truth about the dinosaurs. Most people were ready to believe us, but there were still some who had doubts. The photographs we'd taken? They could be fakes. The specimens we'd collected? They could be from anywhere. Our own stories? We could be four liars, not just one. It was at this point that Challenger signalled to me and Zambo, who were waiting at the side of the stage. We carried forward a large packing case. Challenger pulled off the lid and peered inside, cooing, "Come then, pretty, pretty." There was a scratching and rattling sound, and out came a hideous baby pterodactyl. It perched on the edge of the case for a moment, glaring maliciously at the audience, then took off, flying round and round the hall before disappearing out an open window. Well, no one could doubt us now.
The crowd cheered and clapped and sang for their jolly good fellows, and they carried us on their shoulders out into the streets, stopping traffic and causing chaos for the rest of the evening.
Finally, do you remember that blue mud Lord John was so fascinated by? It turns out it was full of diamonds. Lord John got it valued in London, and it was worth £500,000. Because Lord John was a true gentleman, he divided the money equally between the four of us. Challenger was going to spend his share on setting up a private museum about his work. Summerlee was going to retire from the university and spend his time writing up his study of fossils. Lord John was going to pay for another expedition to Maple White Land.
"As to you, young fella," he said to me, "you, of course, will use your money to get married."
"Not just yet," I said with a smile. "I think, if you'll have me, that I would rather go with you." Lord John said nothing, but he stretched out a brown hand and shook mine. This recording was produced by The Pod Factory with music by kind permission of the Emerald Ensemble.